Adventurers, this is Lizzie from the Westerverse. Welcome to my campaign diaries for the Guardians of Fahal. Today we're going to be talking about episode 29, Stalking Strangers. Woohoo! So, a little recap for this episode. In the last one, Hans and Franz Anders' character had just won the fighting pits, and during that fight, or right before it, there was a moment where Una had approached Ulin, which is a man that she recognizes from her childhood who was friends with her older sister. And she was like, I'm going to take this chance to like approach him. So we kind of had to go back in time a little bit and figure out what happened with that encounter. But yeah, that's where we started this episode off, was figuring out how that went. You know, I was nervous. I didn't know how long she had left on her disguise self spell, or Sam had left for her shape-shifting, and it turned out to be okay where she could have this conversation. But yeah, that was a very, it was a very, very stressful thing. And we kind of had settled out in the middle of the, like, between game, where they were in the timeline. I actually mapped out hour, like 45-minute, 10-minute increments of like where they were at. So she had time left, but man, I was not sure how this was gonna go. So yeah, it did go really interesting. So a little background. Ulin is somebody I wanted to be in the party to make a sense of a little bit of a nuance, because basically it's one thing when you have a group that is clearly inspired by, you know, very far right ideology, Nazism, fascism, blah, da, 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 you know, like that sort of mindset. It's very much one thing to kind of have like, oh, yep, you know, the stormtroopers and the Empire are clearly coded to be Nazis, da, 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 da. That is what it is. But having somebody that you know, who's kind of, you have fond memories of, falling down this dark hole, it's really more interesting. And I wanted Ulin to be there kind of as a potential flip for them. I wanted to see if they could, maybe, if they would try to approach him. Because I thought it would be more interesting and a chance to kind of give more stage for my villains if they could flip him. So I'm actually really happy Megan took the opportunity. But then I didn't really know how to play him. And I think most of this was because there is meta knowledge of me knowing that Una is in disguise. And like, she's basically like a teenager, but Ulin is like pushing his 30s. So it was a little weird trying to remember that, like, this guy sees her as an adult woman who's coming up and flirting with him. Kind of a mindset I have a hard time picturing, as I am not a, well, I am pushing 30, but like, I'm not a man with the drinking problem who is part of a organization that he thought was gonna help him find himself, and it's just making him more depressed. And then I've got, like, you know, but I, as a DM, know that she is underage. It's a little weird. It's one of those gray areas of D&D where I'm like, I felt a little uncomfortable with, but anyway, I thought it was fun, and we did some roll-offs and it worked out all right. And I am super happy that it went well. I was a little bit curious to see, because like, if she would have fucked it up, or her disguise self would have dropped or whatever, like, I was kind of prepared for him to maybe try to grab her, or if one of the other people had come back sooner, maybe something would have happened. I don't know. Well, I was kind of just really waiting to see what's happening with that whole interaction. But fortunately for Megan and for me as a DM, she had a really kind of interesting conversation and set up a date with him, and like a chance to maybe get him alone later where they could grab him and ask questions. And like, very, very good job. Very good job. And it also gives me a chance to like spotlight my villain. So overall, I was super happy with this encounter, but I in the back of my head, I was like, this could go south really quick, but it worked out well. So The other thing that was super nice is because Aaron decided to stay down and watch the fight, he got to run into and overhear some of Lou's upset conversation at losing with Sienna, which also gave me a great chance to drop some plots and hints of what they might be doing. And I did this in case they decided not, because one, I didn't know Una was going to try to set up a date with Ulin at all. Like, I didn't expect that to be the thing that would come out of this. So I knew that this was kind of a way for them to maybe get a little bit more information and insight on the fact that they're going to be doing something in a few days and, you know, maybe they should look into it. That was kind of the hope. That was my subtle way of throwing them some bones. So it was really good that Aaron rolled really stealthy and didn't necessarily alert them, because it probably, he wouldn't have heard some of the conversation then. It was very much a, I feel like as a DM, sometimes you have to prepare to, like, have those convenient overheard conversations. And honestly, like, I had planned it a couple different ways. Like, if they hadn't heard that, then maybe they would have found out via some other things. I had a few different tricks up my sleeve because I wanted them to at least get a hint that something was going down in a few days and, you know, leave. And one of the things I actually thought that they would do and they didn't, and I think it was probably because of what Una had disguised Spreewell as, and then Megan wanted to stay, or Sam wanted to stay with Megan in snake form. But, like, I kind of expected one of them to, like, be doing some eavesdropping. Like, I thought one of them would, like, use either Spreewell to eavesdrop or use Nora to, like, eavesdrop on either the, like, the targets or maybe on the nobles box, which, because I had a bunch of stuff written up there too, because I thought maybe they would be interested in that, but they didn't. So it's okay though, because Lauren got all my notes on that, because, so spoilers, her character was actively watching the noble box and she has the observant feet, so she was catching whatever she could with lip reading. So yeah, those notes didn't go to waste. All right. So one other small thing. So the other thing that was really, I was super excited about for in this episode was I got to show off some of the nobles that were at this event and have one of them talk to him. And I never expected this to be an opportunity. I thought they would see them from afar and maybe eavesdrop on them. So I had all these notes written up. So I was actually kind of happy, like, I was disappointed that my barbarian bad guy did not win the fighting pits, but it actually worked out that one of the players did, because then I got to have them meet some of the nobles that I was hoping I could bring into the story later. And basically, I actually did a good job of describing the boxes, the room size, and the furniture, and, like, the colors and everything like that, basically to showcase the wealth of them and everything. And it's interesting because it's showing, like, these are very powerful men, and, you know, the women that are there are obviously there as courtesans and whatever. So it's but it was a good chance for me to spotlight all their heraldry, which I was super excited about. So a side note for people who care about history, a lot of times nobles didn't really dress in heraldry. I think a lot of the misconception of that is because in all, like, the portraits and in a lot of official art pieces, they normally are dressed in heraldry. And certainly, like, in instances, like, you would have those. But mostly nobles didn't really dress in their heraldry all the time. And it's because they just wanted to wear their family, like, they didn't want to wear their family sigils all the time, especially in battle. Why would you ever put your king in, like, a super obvious outfit? Like, that'd be stupid. You want him to be a little bit nondescript so he's not taken out. But I purposely kind of hinted at a lot of these guys' heraldry signs in their clothing, because I wanted to make a connection for the players. So if they see their iconography later, they can be like, oh, this is this person we met who has flowers, and this guy has a griffin, and this guy has a bow and an arrow and whatever. But realistically, like, historically, that usually didn't happen except for, like, in official paintings. And, you know, and largely it was because I had spent a bunch of time coming up with their different sigils and colors, and I wanted to showcase that. It also gave me a great chance because they got to come right up close and personal with Lord Fuckboy himself, Rice. Yes, my favorite baddie for them to hate. It's so great that they actively hate him so much. That was my goal. I've done a good job. They absolutely despise him. It's actually kind of a good sign as a DM when you create someone who gets it under their skin enough, because outside of game, they occasionally, whenever there's somebody who's really, like, shitty or whatever, they're like, I've heard them make allusions to him as an NPC, and I'm like, oh yes, I did my job right.
They absolutely hate him. I love it.
And I like the fact that there's kind of a mixed bag of the nobles in there. Some of them are a little bit nicer than others, and have more personalities. And it's interesting because, like, so as a system of government, feudalism is awful. Like, you know, having nobles and lords and kings and queens and ladies and duchesses and dukes and whatever, really shitty form of government. It kind of perpetuates a lot of inequality. But as a person, I really find nobles interesting. I love looking up histories about, like, these nobles, because normally they were, like, really crazy, and, like, sometimes they were actually really nice, and I really hate the system of government, but some of them are actually good people. But the problem is, like, they're part of a system that is desperately unfair, so maybe that'll change as time goes on in the system, but, like, I also like the fact that they have complicated relationships with one another, and you probably couldn't pick up on it necessarily from those initial conversations in the booth. However, for my notes that I gave Lauren, I had her, because she can read lips, she was kind of able to pick up more of, like, the actual inner dynamics of, like, how they are together. And there's kind of some important reasons why I included that, but I can't say without spoilers, so we'll just let that be for now. But, you know, you clever listeners, you can probably figure out why I would develop something like that. One thing that was also really fun was I was trying to think of, like, they wanted to specifically meet the exile because he did quite a few things that were noteworthy other than just beating the champion. And it was largely because he was very honorable with how he fought, and he definitely, like, he would do lay on hands to boop people back up, and he would not necessarily fight underhanded, and then he had the cleverness with, like, the misty step and everything like that. And just overall, he kind of, even though it was, like, a seedy, grungy fighting pit, like, the nobles kind of saw his little acts of, let's say, maybe not chivalry, but, like, being a decent human being, where they were like, you know, this guy's got muscle and I could use always some more muscle and whatever, but he also seems kind of trustworthy and noble, and where he didn't have to be, and that might be somebody that could have some more potential career options than just being a goon bodyguard. So I loved coming up with these different career options. Not thinking they would actually, you know, necessarily take them, but I loved having them as options because I thought it was super, super funny. And I thought it was interesting, too, because, like, they're all scattered around, and it also gave me a chance to kind of showcase what they were in charge of, or maybe, like, what they would use their skill set for. I got to allude to the fact that Lord Briar has a massive family. There's actually some interesting stuff about his family, but it didn't really come up, so maybe it will eventually. Other than he has a lot of kids. And Lord Westwood, that one was the one that they were the most interested in because it was, like, monster hunting. And it's actually really interesting. This will come up much later in the game. But Westwood's organization of, like, monster slayers, it's kind of in tandem with one of the religious institutions to the goddess of, like, the hunt in the wilderness, where she has a bunch of, like, rangers that are also usually, like, quote-unquote, virginal, which in this society I'm kind of using a little bit like how the Greeks did, where it just meant you were unmarried. There's kind of a crazy fan theory. I think I talked about this in a really old episode. It was when they were traveling to the Nightingale. There's a lot of things about, like, how people associate, like, the goddess Artemis and Diana with being, like, a virginal goddess, when a lot of times it's like, well, I think a lot of LGBTQ plus culture has co-opted that to be representative of, like, oh yeah, if you were a lesbian or liked women, you would totally join Artemis's organization because then you couldn't get married, but you were surrounded by lots of, like, beautiful women, and this is and, like, physically fit women, you were in quarters together all the time, and I have that a little bit in my world too, but the Monster Hunter organization that Westwood also helps run, a lot of the monsters that they fight originally and historically were monsters from the Fey realm. So Westwood actually really doesn't like the Fey. and I think it would have been interesting because he seems like a very noble person, but he's actually really bigoted, and it didn't really come up at all or anything, but it comes up in a later episode. So I figured I'd just kind of mention it now, but it was funny because as a DM, I knew this about Westwood's character, that, like, if the Exile had come in with, like, Rowan and Nora being like, oh, here's part of a mission, you know, like, these are some really talented hunters, like, the organization would not have let them in because Westwood is, like, a shithead and doesn't really want to let in, like, other, like, he doesn't want to have diversity because he's a bigot. So, anyway, that would have been interesting, but at the time, they didn't really know that, and I think it's very telling that, like, sometimes with things like that, somebody can appear to be a really good, honorable person because they're nice to you, but, like, necessarily somebody who's your friend. Mm-mm. Oh, okay. So, one last thing about the nobles, and then I'll shut up about them. Jasper Evelyn, I think this was referenced in the episode. Yeah, it was. So I came up with this NPC with one of my old coworkers who I sadly no longer work with. He got a better job offer and moved on. But, like, we used to just talk, and he helped me create this NPC. And, like, I said he could be a noble, and he was just going to be, like, some random noble, but then we decided, no. He wanted him to be, like, a war veteran and, like, a ship captain who had, like, a gambling habit and who, like, was really smart, and he had like an eye patch and he had gotten it during battle and kept fighting, and we just made this guy awesome. And now this guy in my game, I was like, he's too cool. I gotta make him, like, one of the marquees and, like, on the ladies' court and, like, head of the Royal Navy. And I just love him. And my favorite thing about him is not his swordfish rapier. It's not his eye patch that he got in battle. And it's not even that he's just a cool ass, like, sailor. It's the fact that, like, Jasper gave me this suggestion. By the way, my coworker's name was Jasper, so I named him after him. Jasper's suggestion for this guy was that if somebody comes and asks him for a favor, he wants to challenge them to a game of sorts. And if they can beat him, then he will help them. And I was like, that is so cool. Like, that's just such a cool, like, that's like a level of, I don't want to say, like, fairness, but that just leads itself to such interesting scenarios where it's like, so a guy who just works on the docks could, like, petition this guy, and he's like, I'll tell you what, if you beat me in a game of chess or whatever, you can have whatever, that you can have this. And then if you do it, then you get it. And I'm like, that's so cool. And I'm excited because I hope one day the players will have to ask him for a favor. And then he'll do it. And I mean, he wouldn't do it with everything, but, like, you know, I think that's a kind of way of him testing somebody's, like, merit. You know, can you outsmart me? And I just love that. As a DM, that gives me such juicy opportunities. And I'm hoping, especially with Una's arc pulling them towards the ocean, there is a reason that this will have to come up. And I think the players all know about this at this point. But so I think they're like, they know about it. And it's one of those things where it's like, it has been said. I hope it happens in the game at some point. Because whether they win or lose, it's going to be a great experience. This campaign diary is kind of weird. Because I think I did a little bit of a summary. I know we did a summary of this, but yeah, we lost 40 minutes of a very intense cat and mouse game. And it really, really sucks. Like, absolutely sucks. I'm still upset about this. That was, like, the first time that we had ever really had major issues with recording, and it just fucking killed me because it was really tense going back and forth and having, like, the stealth off. And they made some really probably bad decisions in how they were going to follow home. But I will say this a little bit. There were some decisions that Una made in the game that definitely affect later interactions with the with their targets. It kind of tipped them off. And I'll talk about that more, I think, on the episodes when they go on the date, because I think Ulin specifically mentions a couple of them. And I might have mentioned a couple of them, but I haven't re-listened to those new episodes in a while, so I can't remember if I explained why. But yeah, if there had been a couple decisions that, like, Una did not make, then it probably... It might have changed some of the stuff that happened with the dates later. But anyway, I had to cut all that. Really sucked. It was a very tense session of audio, and it was like a chase. It was like not even a chase scene. It was like a slow chase scene. It's just super. Oh, I'm so mad about it. Okay, I'm not gonna bitch about this. You guys don't want to hear me bitch about 40 minutes of audio you don't get to hear. Okay. So, some final notes for this episode. One, I am so happy that the audio kicked back in when they were in the Dandy Rooster talking and the brothers got their little moment. And Josh is Hans and Franz completely freaking out over the possibility of Nora being like that that sexy lady walking around flirting with people with the snake. That was hilarious. But it's really, really funny because, one... It absolutely confirms that there is clearly some infatuation with his character and Sam's character, Nora. And above table, like, we had all kind of known this for a while, and Sam and Josh are, like, equally kind of, like, slowly playing into this and doing their thing with it. I love romance in RPGs. I think it's cool as long as everyone is on board and there's clear boundaries and they communicate and there's everyone's enthusiastically involved in it. Okay. But the thing that's super funny about it, listening in hindsight, is how I actually know, like, this is kind of a phenomenon. I've been talking about this with some of my friends. It's like a phenomenon where, like, I don't want to say just men do this, but, like, because women do this too, where it's like you're really into somebody and then sometimes, like, if you see them in one way and then you see them in a completely other way, it's very jarring. And yes, Nora was not being, like, the sexy flirting with all the strangers and whatever. So, like, that would have been really out of character for her. But sometimes when you really, like somebody and you're in that infatuation stage and you have this really tight built-up image of what they're like, seeing another side of their personality is a little bit jarring. And I think that that is kind of hilarious. And I know that I've been guilty of doing that, where it's like I have somebody in their box and then, like, they are outside of it and it kind of jars me. I've done this even with, like, friends. Like, when the platonic version of this is you're really good friends with one person and then you see them around another old friend they used to have or, like, a family member, and a side of their personality that you have never seen comes out before, and you're just like, oh my god, like, it almost jars you and you're like, I don't know what to think about this. Makes me uncomfortable, or I don't know, this, you're not who I thought you were. But no, like, Nora is still Nora. It is funny. I do hope that there is actually a musical number scene where he, like, confesses his feelings and is singing to bees, and it's literally, like, that scene from the Disney's Hercules movie where it's like, I won't say I'm in love. This is the best musical number in that movie. Don't even lie, you know it. I will not take debates on this, it's true. But speaking of debates, yeah, they're a little bit confused about what to do if Una should go on the date with Ulin, and they go back and forth over it for a while, and the next session is mostly them weighing the pros and cons of what they want to do. Oh yeah, and then they're also, like, talking about how he ran into Lord Rice, and Andrew's character, because Andrew was gone, doesn't know exactly what was happening between what's happened, between, he didn't know that, like, Lord Rice will not leave Rhiannon alone and keeps pestering her about marriage. But there is more to that, but Josh's character doesn't know about that either. So it's just kind of funny how Josh got to witness that full experience as a spectator, and then Andrew had left early the game, so he didn't even know. So he's just like, wait, what's going on? I'm really confused. What's this dynamic? Should I have even more reasons to hate this person? They're being a creep. Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, it's interesting. Probably would have made standing there talking to him even more horrible and infuriating than it already was when he just thought he was gambling away all of his citizens' money. The brotherly wrestling was really, really cute. I loved it. Shenanigans. Sureblood's not here for it. Sureblood is like, y'all are being loud and you're obnoxious to ride with on. And you know, I just don't like this. You get off my back. You two go roll around on the ground. But it was perfect setup. I was waiting for them to go back so Josh could see that, like, his little shrine to Angeed kind of had taken root. And, like, there was a honeycomb. There's, like, bees there. They're chilling out. And I really am interested in seeing what they're going to do for the third goddess. And then, like, I as of where they are in the game right now, that is completed. So technically there's, like, three shrines in this area. And, they haven't been back there in games since they completed it. So I'm actually really curious to see what, like, I'm a little torn about what to do with it as a DM. Cause I'm like, I feel like it should maybe get something. Like, I don't know if I would say the hollow effect, like the hollow spell effect, but maybe something. I don't know. There feels like there should be some sort of like, something for it. So, yeah, I think that's basically it for today. I really loved this session. It was a lot of fun. I'm sad that the audio got lost, but overall, it was a great wrap-up to the fighting pits. And next time, the episode is gonna be a little shorter, because it's mostly them talking about planning, and I cut a lot of it out, so... Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Thank you all for listening. If you like this, please like and share it on social media, comment under Patreon, give us a review on your preferred podcast listening platform, and yeah, until next time, see you then, adventurers. Have a good one.